Welcome back to the Love Intently podcast. I'm Sophie Kwok, your host and the founder of Love Intently, where our mission is to empower you to have a thriving relationship with yourself and everyone around you. And this week we have an incredible guest, Whitney Morrison, a certified financial planner, money mindset expert, and the founder of Holistic Money, an online money coaching platform that teaches individuals to revolutionize their relationship with money, maximize their income, and achieve the freedom lifestyle they have always desired. Most couples I admire have told me that one of the best things they ever did for their relationship is keeping a weekly date night, regardless of what was happening in their lives. I love going on fun and unique dates, but I don't love planning them, and neither does my partner. We both have so much going on in our lives, and even during a pandemic, we just don't have the time to do the research to come up with something we've never done together before. And this is why I am such a huge fan of the Adventure Challenge. It is a scratch-off book with 50 date ideas. So essentially for the price of one date, you get 50 dates. And they are all COVID-friendly. They're all pandemic-friendly. I know for us, planning these unique dates have been even harder during the pandemic. Some of you might be skeptical. My partner definitely was. He wasn't sure how legit the dates would be, but he became a quick lover of the Adventure Challenge after our first date. He immediately said that it was super fun and he couldn't wait to do our next date. They will let you know whether the date will be indoor, outdoor, if it'll be creative or chill, if it'll include food or the outdoors, all of these different factors so that you can pick one based on your mood. Did I mention that they have a friends edition and a family edition as well? So these are for you single people or people that have bigger families. You can do this with the entire family, which is incredible. You can get 10% off of your first order by using the code LOVEINTENTLY, LOVEINTENTLY, one word. And you can find the link to the Adventure Challenge in our show notes. If you do get an Adventure Challenge, be sure to tag us and let us know that you did. I cannot wait to see all of your incredible dates and all the memories that you get to create. Whether you are new to the Love Intently podcast or you have listened to every episode, if you haven't taken the attachment style quiz yet, you will want to. It only takes 5 minutes and is such a powerful tool in helping identify self-sabotaging behaviors and patterns in relationships. All you have to do is go to loveintently.com/attachment style. And yes, this quiz is free. Now, if you have taken the quiz and you're wondering, okay, what's next? How do I take this knowledge a little deeper and actually create the relationship that you have always dreamed of? There are two ways of working with me. One, there's one-on-one coaching. And that is for people who are fresh out of relationships, single and looking in a relationship, or people who are currently in relationships and wanting support in evolving that relationship into something more of what they want. One-on-one coaching is special because it really meets you where you are and you get personalized, high-touch access to me that you just don't get in the group program. In the group program, it is a super powerful container that will help you identify where you're self-sabotaging and empower you to create the relationships that you really want with yourself and the people around you. The group program is powerful in that you gain a community of people who also share a common goal. The friendships that you will build from this container will last a lifetime, and it includes live coaching calls. So you do get access to me. You just don't get as much personalized access. In both the group coaching and one-on-one coaching program, I use a blend of mindset work, somatic and nervous system regulation practices, as well as inner child healing sessions. I find that to really create transformation, you need to connect the mind, the heart, the soul, and the body. And that is why I use a blend of a lot of different methodologies that I've found to be so impactful and transformational for me. There's nothing I'm going to have you guys try that I haven't tried before. And to ensure the quality of the group program as well as the one-on-one program. There is an application process because I am only taking people on who are really ready to transform their lives and relationships and willing to put in the work. There is work associated with creating this type of transformation. And once you complete the application, someone will reach out to you and discuss if this is a really good fit for you in this season. If you have any additional questions, the easiest way to reach me currently is to find me on Instagram and DM me. You can find me at love.intently or at sofquak. I am truly so excited to connect with more of you and to support you on your own journeys. And yeah, if you do join either one of these programs, it's going to be a great time. Whitney is also a dear friend of mine who I have just walked through so many seasons of life with over the last 5 years that we've known each other. We also will host retreats together every once in a while, so that's something to look forward to. She is an incredible human and coach, and I cannot wait to share this conversation with you. So without further ado, here is our conversation. Whitney, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, I am so excited to be here.
Yes. So for those of you who don't know who Whitney Morrison is, which I'm like, if you follow me on Instagram, I don't know how that's possible because I've posted about her a million times. She is a dear friend of mine. She has been my money coach. She was previously a design client and someone I've just been able to watch evolve on this beautiful journey with her money. And it has been one of the most inspiring things for me because let's face it, I had so much crap around money. So I would love for our audience to learn more about you. Can you share with us your journey with money? And have you always been this good with money?
Oh my gosh, no. When I heard you say, let's face it, I had, you know, my journey and my past with money. I am the exact same way. So I've been a financial planner for 12 years, but I always tell people that I've been like a crappy financial planner for eight of those 12 years. And I say that with so much love for myself because I think it took a lot of soul searching and a lot of money mindset work to really get me where I am today. But I have, like I said, I've been a financial planner for 12 years, but most recently within the past 4 years, I've really started doing more of the money mindset work. And the reason why I did that is because right out of college, I decided I wanted to be a financial planner specifically because so much of the financial trauma that I had experienced when I was growing up. So my dad was a compulsive gambler. There was a lot of money fights in my family. And really money just absorbed a lot of the dysfunction that existed in my family. And so I knew like from a very young age, I was like, yep, I'm going to figure out this money thing. And so right out of college, I became a financial planner. And like, I really believed that by becoming a financial planner, by learning the ins and outs of money, that I would somehow learn how to be really good with money. And don't get me wrong, I did learn a lot of really great and useful knowledge about money. But for the first 8 years of my career as a financial planner, it was not easy because what they don't tell you when you become a financial planner is that really what you're doing is you are in a sales role. And so I was wanting to help and serve people with their money, but I just had no idea how to confidently communicate my value. I had no idea how to ask for money. I felt incredibly unworthy of money, especially coming from a family who had so much trauma with money. So it was a really fascinating journey for me to be in the industry, to struggle with money internally, but like, you know, kind of how the outward facing of like, oh, I'm really good at money. And so, like I said, you know, this past 4 years of my life, I've really dove into the money mindset. And that's where I found so much of my money transformation that I've experienced today.
Yeah, that's so insane because I don't think that anybody realizes that's what the financial planning industry looks like. And you would assume that if you are a financial planner, that you have the money mindset stuff locked in.
Oh my gosh, no. I would say most financial planners actually don't have the money mindset stuff locked in. It's really, really fascinating because when you go into becoming a financial planner, the attrition rate within the industry is like 90% or something like that. Like, and it is because you go into a job where you don't have a fixed salary, where you are commission based, and where you are trying to build a book of business. And this is what a lot of the advisors that work at large banks are up against. And so, I know you have a lot of listeners on this podcast, but if any of you have had friends who have worked at a bank or been a financial planner for a short period of time, this is likely why, because it is a difficult industry. As much as you may want to help people with money, if you don't know how to sell yourself and really make your own money, then it's a really difficult, and for me, it was a very triggering experience.
Yeah. When did you realize you had money mindset stuff to work around? And what would you even define as money mindset for people who are new to that concept?
Yeah, sure. So for me, I just remember I was about 4 to 5 years into my career, and I had a client that I was working with, and it was a young couple, and they had a lot more money than I did. And I just remember trying to help them build a financial plan for themselves when internally in the background, I just couldn't even fathom having the amount of money that they had. And they had a lot of scarcity mindset issues that I was noticing, but I felt completely unequipped to help them with, you know, because I was thinking to myself when I was working with them, like, what do you guys mean you're worried about money? You have so much money. And I didn't really, but it was at that moment that I was understanding, okay, there's something else going on here for people and their money. Like, your financial circumstances, how much money you do or don't have, actually has nothing to do with the way that you think and feel about money. And so I just got really curious about this. And I also saw this with clients too, because I would build them a financial plan. And oftentimes it'd be very difficult to implement the plan because intellectually knowing what to do with your money, it's not enough to be successful. If it was, so many of us would probably spend less than we earn or consistently save or whatever it is that we know we need to do, but we don't. And money mindset is the reason why.
Right. What are like the top three most common limiting beliefs you see people or you see keeping people from making more money?
I think number one, it's just believing that asking for more money is in some way rude or irresponsible or pretentious. And I see this with a lot of the people that I coach is like, and I think this exists for entrepreneurs and employees, but just the sense that if I ask for more money, people are going to think that I am greedy, that I am bad, that I am pretentious. And I think that belief alone is one that we all just need to debunk, because really the amount of money that you make is directly tied to the amount of value that you provide. And those are the things that it's so important to ground into, to be in full awareness around as you have these conversations. But so many of us forget that connection and we just think we're asking for more money because we're bad or we're greedy.
Right. Yeah. I remember you saying this to me around like women get triggered when they have to ask for more money and men get triggered when they don't make enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, women are much more likely to feel uncomfortable asking for money. And men are much more uncomfortable when they don't have money to provide for their family. So it's a very different kind of relationship to authority over money. Like women are not socially conditioned to have as much authority over money as men, because men, it's culturally acceptable and encouraged for men to be the providers for the family. And like, that is the role that they are expected to play. So of course they're going to ask for more money. Women don't have that same expectation, at least previously. I think there's a lot of transformation happening in that, but women just don't have that. And at least that social conditioning. So it can be a very different experience for women to ask for money than men.
Right. So number one is people feel bad or feel pretentious for asking for more money. What's another limiting belief that you see keeping people from making more money?
Another one that I see a lot is that you have to be credentialed to make money. I think that this can be a really big blocker for entrepreneurs, and it can be a big blocker in the workplace as well, where it's like we have our brains tied, our income at least tied around to the certifications that we do or don't have. And this can be incredibly limiting for people, because you never want the amount of money that you make to be directly tied to the cultural norms around anything, right? And there are a lot of people who I think limit themselves or keep themselves small or don't see the potential in front of them because they're believing that they need to know more. I believe that we all have a lot of financial potential and financial power within us, but we are constantly looking for reasons why it's not there. And I see this as one of the reasons that people, entrepreneurs and employees too, can come up with as a reason why they don't want to get in the uncomfortable conversation of asking for more money.
Yes, I hardcore struggled with this one, especially when it came to diving into relationship coaching. And you really helped me shift my mindset around that. And it's been incredible to see the shifts and impact that I've been able to make since just believing that, or just removing that limiting belief around needing to be credentialed, even though I'm constantly learning new things and new methods and new ways to serve the people that I relationship coach with.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that you are the perfect example, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this, but you have developed such a level of awareness, and you have so much knowledge and information around relationships. But because of society's conditioning, it can be very easy to think to yourself like, oh, well, I need to get a certification, or I need to make sure that I have a degree, or I need to know more around this. And it's just like, as long as you can be a few steps ahead of someone else and you have value that you can offer them, you can charge money, you can build a business, and also you can get that raise and promotion at work the school of life is the most valuable education that you can ever get. As long as you have experience, then yeah, you can start to make a lot more money a lot faster than what you may think.
Okay, so that is two things. What's a third limiting belief that you see that keep people from making more money?
The third one is money is limited. And I know that this one talked about a lot, but I think it's one of the most profound beliefs, because if we look at the way that our economy works, we can very quickly debunk that belief. So a lot of us believe that there's just a finite amount of money in circulation. And if we are earning more than someone else or charging more than someone else, then we are taking money away from other people. But it's just not how our economy works, and it's not how you want to think about money and what's available to you. Because if you constantly are believing that whenever you are charging more or asking for money, more money, you're taking away from someone else, then of course that's going to be a painful and difficult experience for you to do, because who wants to be that person? Who wants to do that? Nobody does. But it is a belief that exists in your brain that actually doesn't exist. So money is created by corporations and by business owners. So every day, every time you sell a new product or you make profit, we are actually expanding the amount of money that's in circulation in our economy. And so there's no such thing as this finite amount of money that is in existence. It's constantly growing as we are creating. And so we can really start to remember that and believe that and understand that by us making money, we are increasing the amount of money in the world. And that also increases the opportunity for a lot of other people to make more money because more money is in circulation.
Right. That is something that totally blew my mind when I came to that realization that money is man-made. Like, it is not something that is natural to Earth, but it is something that humans made and that they can make more and that it's not a finite resource.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people think that, you know, the government just says that there's, you know, this amount of money in circulation, but no, it is created by businesses, by corporations, by the work that we do. Like, we create money. Like, that's just like mind blowing, right? And entrepreneurs create money out of thin air. It's like, it's really incredible.
Right. What are some limiting beliefs for you that you had to move through? Like, what did money mindset work look like for you?
Oh my gosh. Money mindset work. I mean, really starting to challenge myself to make really big money decisions in my business. It has been one of the most uncomfortable things I've done. I mean, you know this. Mm-hmm. I went from charging $500 for one-on-one financial planning services to now charging multiple thousand dollars for packages for entrepreneurs to grow their wealth and grow their money mindset. And that transition to move from $500, now the highest package that I offer is $12,000, and to do that within a couple years has stretched my belief in what's possible for me in my life. If you would have told me that I could be a coach or an entrepreneur who is earning the amount of money that I'm earning now, I would never have believed you. But the money mindset work that I really had to commit to was really looking at the unique value that I offer and really seeing that and really seeing the power of the work that I do and allowing myself to risk appearing greedy, to risk appearing selfish, to risk appearing like people wouldn't like me or think that I was too much, like all of the limiting beliefs that existed in my head. I really had to coach myself to get past them because they were what was preventing me from taking big, juicy action in my business. And I just had to believe that what I do is transformative and it is worth the price that I choose. And I just had to risk all of the things that I had believed about myself for a very long time. And then as I got more and more evidence, my brain got more evidence that I was okay, that all of the stories I had and all the fears just existed in my brain. I just started to like very quickly, like knock down these money beliefs that were holding me back from making a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like, once you recognize your limiting beliefs around money, it might take a little while, but it's like, once you recognize it, it's really hard to ignore it. Like every day you're kind of faced with, I'm going to be stuck making this amount of money until I am willing to get uncomfortable and either ask for more money or create more offers where I can charge more or whatever it is. Once you recognize that you are the only person that can make yourself more money, it's hard to ignore.
Oh, yeah, it is. And It starts with really looking at just the beliefs that we grew up with. You know, I work with people with all different financial backgrounds, right? Some people that come from a lot of money, some people who come from extreme poverty. You know, I have some clients who are really working to revolutionize their family's history with money and to just like do things completely differently. And our money beliefs are shaped at a very young age, like age 0 to 14. And oftentimes we hold them very dear to us because we just believe that the world works this very specific way with money. And then when you start to get coaching on some of these things that you're like, oh no, of course, this is how the world works. Like, it can be a mind-blowing experience. I remember when I first started doing this work, I had a good 3 or 4 months where I questioned whether or not I was completely delusional. Like, I was like, wait a second. So you mean to tell me like I really can create whatever I want and I'm going to, and I can just go for it? Like, I really felt like I had broken through so much of the conditioning in the world that I had lived in for so long. And I just entered into a new universe. And it felt exactly as I'm describing it. Like, I just walked outside and I was even a little disoriented. Like, what is happening right now? Because I just experienced that big of a mindset shift. And honestly, it was in that moment that my income went from 24,000 in 6 months to over 175,000 in 6 months. And I had a jump from like a $2,000 month to, I think my next month was 11. And then after that it was 30, and then it was 31, and then 70. And it was because of this radical perspective shift that I allowed myself to experience. And now now that I've seen what is possible, it's like, this is what I love coaching my clients on, is really allowing them to see what is possible for themselves, for their businesses, for their lives, for their money, because we can break generational money patterns that we've heard through our family. I mean, listen, there was so much financial trauma in my life growing up, and to create something so much different than what I experienced has just been, I just really credit it all to the mindset work that I do and that now I do with my clients.
Yeah. And what is crazy is I remember, like, can you share with people where you were 5 years ago financially?
Oh yeah. So 5 years ago, I was engaged and I was working for an online entrepreneur. I had spent the first 7 or 8 years of my career at Wells Fargo Advisors trying to do the financial advisor thing. Like I said, I was like, you know, in the selling world and just not doing well with that. Decided to leave and work for an online entrepreneur. And I so badly wanted to work for her that I was paid $1,500 a month before taxes for a year.
Wow.
And even 5 years ago, that was very little money. Like, what is $1,500? That's like $18,000 a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I made that decision to do that. I accepted to a payment that was way lower than what I should have. And then I met someone and I got engaged, and we were engaged for a short amount of time. And then he encouraged me. He said, "Hey, I think you should start a business. It's time." And so I had always wanted to do this, and having the support of my fiance. And when I say support, of course, I mean emotional, but also financial. He was in a much different financial situation than I was. And he really created this cushion, at least in my brain at that time, for me to take this big risk. And so I quit my job. I started my business. And then about 2 months after I started my business, two significant things happened. Number one, my fiance told me he met someone else. And number two, the online entrepreneur that I worked for, she sued me because I started a money business. She was in money as well. She was a money coach. So she sued me for a non-compete. And I didn't have any money. I was, at that point, I had spent a year working for her making pennies. I was really relying on my fiance to support me. And then we broke up. I got sued. My business went down the drain because it was just too much for me to handle all of that. And so I had to move out. I had to get an apartment. My mom was helping me with my rent. It was the worst situation. And I'm 34. So this was not when I was like, you know, a spring chicken. I was in my late 20s. Some of you may still sound really, really young, but for me, I just had a lot different idea of where I would be as I was approaching my 30s.
Yeah. And I remember meeting you almost like fresh out of the engagement. Like I think it had only been like a couple of months since, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm remembering wrong, but not that long after the engagement got called off. And that whole, I remember like the whole lawsuit thing being a thing. And didn't you have debt at that time as well?
Yeah. So I had about $20,000 in student loan debts that I was working to pay off. And then I had probably $20,000 in credit card debt. But when I was sued and when I moved out, I mean, that went up to probably 30 or 40. And that was when it was just such a terrible time. Emotionally, I was in a really dark place. Like that was really hard. And you did, you met me, a few months after that, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. That's when you met me and I was just trying to crawl out of a hole, girl. I was like really, you know, I was really in it. And that was some of the darkest times of my life. But also, I'm really, really thankful for that experience. I just learned so much about myself and my emotions and like what I really need to take care of my mental health. And I learned about just completely falling down and slowly picking up the pieces of my life one by one.
Yeah. And what is insane is like, I can still remember us getting lunch at Mad Greens, like not even that long ago. And the lawsuit, it had been a few years since the lawsuit happened and you were already out of your non-compete, but there was still so much fear and resistance around the situation because of almost like the PTSD from getting sued.
Oh yeah. It's still something that freaks me out. Sometimes if I see an unknown number on my phone, I'm like, is this someone telling me that they need to serve me a lawsuit? Because I think I just got that phone call and it was the worst phone call. I mean, I've had a couple other pretty terrible phone calls, but that was a really bad phone call. But there are just times where I just get worried that, that's going to happen again. And it's completely irrational, but it's just a result of the trauma. And I think if I were to get sued in my business now, it would be a much different experience, but just the combination of my financial situation, my engagement ending, starting a business in such a fragile place, and then that lawsuit, it was just like, you know, everything came together. It was the perfect shit storm.
So the reason I even know about the Adventure Challenge is because Raina, an incredible part of our team, shared about it. So I wanted her to share about her experience with the Adventure Challenge. So why do you love the Adventure Challenge?
I love the Adventure Challenge because it gives us planned quality time together that we don't have to think about. So we just have these like really cool adventures that get us outside of our comfort zone and challenge us to be together in just a different way. So they're always like creative and just things we wouldn't think about that make it so beautiful and just beautiful experiences.
And what was it about the Adventure Challenge that made you want to get it initially?
Initially, I got it because for the holidays, we always try to give gifts of experiences because they're way more valuable than buying like a material object for us. And so I got it with the idea that like, oh, this will be fun. Like it'll give us ideas for dates and stuff. And it's so much more because it's this scrapbook. It's capturing all of our memories and it's giving us these wonderful, fun ideas of things to do. And just overall, like building our communication even stronger and our relationship stronger.
Who do you think would benefit from the Adventure Challenge? Like, who would you recommend getting the Adventure Challenge?
I would recommend the Adventure Challenge to any couples that want to do it, but there's also options for families and friends. And I think it's for people who want to step out of their comfort zone and challenge themselves. So maybe they're people who like a plan, but also like adventure. And this allows that because it's ensuring something's going to happen because it gives you the details of your date before you go. But then it's also allows you to have that piece of like, oh, what are we going to do? And that excitement. So I would suggest this for somebody who wants to step out of their comfort zone and grow with their partner or family or friends.
So if you're interested in getting your own Adventure Challenge book, whether it's Friends Edition, Family Edition, or Couples Edition, or even their Advent calendar, then be sure to go to theadventurechallenge.com and use the code LOVEINTENTLY for 10% off. And that is LOVEINTENTLY, LOVEINTENTLY. You can find the link to the Adventure Challenge in our show notes, or you can go to theadventurechallenge.com. Okay, let's shift gears a little bit to what life looks like now. How did you meet and fall in love with your current partner, Craig?
Oh, yeah. My life is so much better now. thank God. I met Craig 3.5 years ago. We met on Bumble. And he's amazing. He's a software engineer. He works here in Austin. But we met on Bumble. And when I met him, he was sober. And he was newly sober. He had been, I think it was like 4 or 5 months when I met him. And I, at that point, I was about 1.5 or 2 years out of my engagement and my lawsuit. And at that point, I did have a deep desire to stop drinking because of that time in my life, one of the things that I did do is I used alcohol to cope. So just meeting him, it was like divine. It was divine timing. I needed to meet someone who was committed to growing, and he was at a really tender spot in his life. He was married before me and had gone through a divorce and had also experienced alcohol abuse and had decided that he was wanting to make a life transformation. And when I met him, when he told me he was sober, I was just really intrigued and I had so much respect for him. And very shortly after we started dating, I stopped drinking. And that was about 3.5 years ago. So I've been sober for 3.5 years. And I'm so thankful for meeting him because he was a big reason why I chose to do that.
Yeah. I remember when you first started dating, like I can remember all of our conversations, like as you're sharing this of when you first met Craig, and I just like knew I wasn't 100% sure about him, but I just knew like something was a little different because I don't know, like it was just like the way that you would talk about the things that y'all were talking about. And I remember when I first met you, like you were definitely in your party girl phase. And so was I. Like I was definitely out drinking. And at the same time, like I had been someone who had been, it's like the term now is sober curious. Someone who had been dabbling of quitting alcohol or drinking way less of it, especially socially, for a long time. And for a long time, I only stuck to alcohol because of the social pressure. Like, I feel like people would get more uncomfortable of me not drinking, like being out and not drinking, than I would. And so when you decided to stop drinking, like, I remember being like, finally, like, other friends get it. And like, I can finally have friends that I don't have to like drink to hang out with. Not that that's all we did, but I felt like for a while there, alcohol is such a strong thread as far as like social lubricant is another word that I've heard in Austin, Texas. And I'm starting to see more and more people realize the negative effects of alcohol and that they can have just as much fun, if not more fun, without it if they choose.
Oh yeah. I was so happy. You and I went to New Orleans at the beginning, or was that New Orleans?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. At the beginning of my sobriety. And I just remember being out and we were at that club and you were like, do you want to go? I was like, yeah.
Yeah. And we had people that we were on that trip with that stayed out till the wee hours of the night. Yes. Like,
yeah. So we were home and we just talked and laughed and had so much fun. Like, I'm so happy that we did that. It was a much more memorable night than any night out drinking. And I think I needed that, you know, I needed to really see that kind of fun was possible. And now I just look back on that and I'm like, oh, wow, like that was so much more, that was such a more meaningful night than, you know, just like getting drunk at the club and dancing until 4 or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like that's such a classic thing that we would do. And I'm like, did we get beignets before we went back or not? Because I feel like that would totally have been a thing that we did.
I don't know. I can't remember that. If we didn't, we should have.
Yeah, totally. Like, go and get a snack and go home and just, I don't know, talk about life. Like, I feel like there's just so much to connect on beyond alcohol.
Yeah.
How did quitting alcohol impact your finances?
It was one of the biggest transformations that I had with my money during that time. I think there's a direct correlation. For me, there was a direct correlation between drinking and spending money, because alcohol is very expensive. Going out to get drinks with friends, going out to get drinks at dinner, at least the way that I was consuming alcohol, was very expensive. So I saved so much money when I stopped drinking. Like, all of a sudden, you know, a lot of people talk about how COVID, they experienced a big shift in their spending. That is what happened for me when I stopped drinking. There was just a big shift in my spending. I didn't even experience a big shift in my spending during COVID, because I would feel like I was living that way even pre-COVID, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that was because I stopped drinking. It is very expensive to drink. Like, every time I was spending time with friends, alcohol was involved prior to me quitting alcohol. And I know that that's not everyone's experience with alcohol, but it definitely was mine. So I had a big, that was like the kickstart of what a series of great financial decisions that got me and Craig where we are today.
Yeah. Let's talk about money with your honey. Okay. When did you start talking to Craig about your money? Girl, or just money in general?
First date.
Wow. Craig.
Yeah. Craig laughs and he's like, yeah, you told me that you want to get into real estate investing on our first date. And that is just really funny, because I have, you know, even though I had not always been as in alignment with money as what I am now, I've always had a deep desire to experience financial freedom just because of everything that I experienced when I was younger. And so, you know, even in some of the more difficult times of my life, it's always been a desire. And so, you know, Craig and I really, in the beginning, it kicked off fast for me. Like, I think about money a lot. I think about how to strategically use money. I think about freedom a lot. And so we started having those conversations incredibly early. Within, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 dates, we were definitely talking about money.
And what do you recommend? Like, where do you recommend people start as far as talking about money with their partners?
That's a great question. I suggest having money, including money as a part of the conversation as frequently as possible. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of the work that I do now is I do work with a couples and on their money. And I will tell you that getting in a relationship with someone that has a completely different relationship to money than you is by no means impossible, but is 100% more difficult and requires a much higher level of awareness and communication. And I do see that it can be a really difficult thing for a lot of couples. So my suggestion is to begin talking about money as quickly as possible. And I even started, you know, with Craig with just like very openly talking about what he felt comfortable with in terms of us paying for things. Because, you know, even though we weren't merging money, we still were engaging in activities together that costs money. We still were making decisions around, oh, let's go on a road trip. Like, which hotel do you want to stay in? Like, all of these decisions require conversations about money. And I think so often we just shy away from really getting to know the other person and how they think about money and how they want to spend money. And in the beginning, I think it can be very common for people just say, oh, I'll pay for that. Or like, you can pay for that without really understanding, okay, how does this feel for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think? Like, what kind of place do you want to stay in? How do you feel about spending this amount of money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as you're saying this, I feel like it might've been from a result of conversations with you, but when I started dating my boyfriend, who, like, we started, I think, 6 months to a year after you and Craig started, and I brought that up pretty early on, and one of the things is he had money blocks that I don't think he was aware of, and it's because we both come from immigrant families and have a lot of scarcity, and so I just remember feeling this tension of, like, I had men in my life saying, you know, if for the first 3 months, like, guys should be paying, and it's like almost disrespectful if the girls bring it up. And then I was also experiencing, like, I don't expect him to pay 100% of the time. Like, I don't, like, I make money. I'm totally comfortable with covering things every once in a while. It's not a big deal for me. And finally, like, I kind of felt like energy was off. So I brought it up and was just like, hey, I know this is probably uncomfortable, but I'm just noticing, you know, like, there is like a weirdness around paying. And so, like, what feels good to you? Like, what are your expectations and vice versa? And I'd come from a little bit more of a traditional Christian background. And so for me, I really appreciated when he paid, and like, I definitely expected, like, on the first 2 or 3 dates that he did, but I also reiterated that I didn't expect him to pay for every single date, and that I was more than happy to pick up the tab every once in a while, and that I would. And he iterated that, like, he really appreciated when I did do that. And for us, it's kickstarted us in a really great route, because shortly after that, we both recognized that we were not that different as far as like our long-term goals around money and how we viewed money and our saving habits and all that. And honestly, he's one of the people where when I am like, dang it, I need new clothes or I need this, he's like, you should go buy that. Like, you never purchase things. Like, the last time you bought anything was a year ago or 6 months ago. Like, it's okay. You make money. You can have that. And has helped me spend more consciously in a way that's like, okay, he's right. Like, I do actually really need these items and I don't need to feel bad about it. Because something that you've talked about is when we buy things and we feel guilty about it, I feel like you end up spending more money in the long run because there's all this like negative emotion that you're not processing. But I echo what you're saying is like, bring up money early on so that's something that you can get aligned with. And just like any other values, your values around money and how you spend it is huge on your relationship. And it's also one of the main reasons people fight and get divorced later in the relationship. So it's like, you might as well get really good at talking about it early on.
Oh, I totally agree. And I love how you brought that up to Maher and had that conversation with him, because I think that it is like, yes, there's this component of money where it's like, you want to see if you're on the same page with someone. But I also believe that there's this sense of like, for me, it's a sense of love and care too. Like, I never wanted Craig to compromise his financial situation in our relationship just to follow societal norms of taking me out and paying for everything all the time. And that's totally who he was and who, like, what he wanted to do. But I was so much more interested in, okay, what's the health of your finances? Is this really the way that we should be spending not only my money, but your money? Like, I just really care about that for everyone. Like, it is a way that I love people, is like, I really want them to be financially sovereign and secure and comfortable. And I just know how much stress can go on for people that they internalize. Money can be so private. And there are a lot of people who do have problems with money who are just suffering in silence.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't want people to know. And so I am so acutely aware of that because I just don't want anyone to have that experience, because it can be a really frightening and lonely place. And yeah, you're not alone. And I just care about that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And money is something that I wish people would be more willing to talk about more. And in the moments that people were willing to share their salaries or how negotiations went for them, it has been life-changing for me. Like, I've been able to negotiate 10 to 20% more every time I've had to negotiate my salary outside of my first job. I did not negotiate that one because of other people being open and willing to talk about their money and their openness to coaching me around it.
Totally. Like, we need to be more open about the money that we make, because it just really paves a path for everyone. If we can all start to have more visibility and clarity and really remove the shame that's associated with money. And because everyone that's in my life, there are very few people that I don't know the details of their financial situation that are in my life. Because, I mean, truly, my friends, my family, because it's like, I am so comfortable talking about money. Talking about money for me is like talking about the weather. It's just like, I tell people how much I make, how much I have, how much I don't have all the time. And I think people are just kind of like, wow, this feels really good just to openly talk about money without any weird charge in the background. And I just think if we could, as a culture and as a society, begin to practice that a bit more, we would all, I mean, I feel like we would benefit in so many ways, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, physically, to be able just to be more open with money.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I could not agree more. I feel that way about people's relationships. So yeah, that's hilarious. Okay. So since you and Craig have met, what does your money look like now? So you used to be, had $28,000 in student loans and had credit card debt. What have you built since?
Yeah. So since then, Craig and I have made big changes. We have bought 3 rental properties together or 3 properties. 2 are rentals. We ended up turning the 2 rentals into duplexes. So that was a cool move that we were able to make to really kind of maximize our rental properties. And then we have a home out in Wimberley, Texas. So we just moved out here in January. We bought 9 acres and it's so beautiful where we live. And, we've really used real estate as a wealth building vehicle for us. But the big changes really came in for me. Number one, my income. So I made a big jump when I was, you know, in that stage after I shut down my business and was kind of recovering from the lawsuit. I decided to get a corporate job, and I was very aggressive about that job search. And I was like, I'm not accepting anything less than $100,000. And the job that I got at LegalZoom paid me, when I started, $135,000. And I was just very conscious with my money when I got that job. And I aggressively paid down my debt. I then started saving for our first house with Craig, and we bought a house 1 year into our relationship together. Mm-hmm. So we bought a house pretty quickly together. It was like, we moved pretty fast on that. And then a year later, bought another house. And then 6 months later, bought another house. And we did that through just saving aggressively and being very focused with what we really wanted. And then most recently, I quit my job and started Holistic Money. And that has just really taken off financially. And I was calculating our net worth a couple days ago, and our net worth is $760,000.
Wow.
And from 5 years ago, being at negative 50 to 750 in that amount of time, I just really believe that it is possible because I've done it, and because I just really believe in the spirit of human resilience. And when we're able to like really, really believe that we can and we will, we can and we do. And so that has been it's pretty incredible to look at what we did, but we just got really intentional and kept our eye on the prize. And it's been a really amazing journey.
One other thing that you have talked about, and I love your perspective on, is debt. It's not that you have zero debt right now, technically, but you've leveraged it in a way that has allowed you to build up your wealth and net worth. Can you talk a little bit about the debt that you have?
Oh, yeah. We have $1.2 million in debt. And that is a lot of debt. If you just look at that debt and think to yourself, like, oh, wow, that's a lot of debt. But I love the debt that we have. All of our debt is real estate debt, and we use it, just like you said, as strategic leverage. So our debt makes us a lot of money every year. So we have our rental properties. We have about $3,500 total of passive income that comes in through our properties. And that is, and then that's not including us paying off our mortgages and things like that, and the expenses associated with their properties. So we do have a lot of debt, but we've used it in a way that is really allowing us to build wealth. And I tell people there are three main ways that you can use debt. Number one is under earning. So I see a lot of people leveraging debt when their income is low, and they use debt to kind of fill that gap for themselves. And it's good to kind of understand how you use debt so you can see like what your path forward is in terms of getting to the third option, which I'll discuss, which is strategic leverage. But number one is under earning. Number two is overspending. So really using money to feel good. And this is something that our society really encourages, just like alcohol. It also encourages overspending. So, hey, if you have a nice car, or you have a nice handbag, you are desirable and you're somebody, you're somebody in the world. You know, we see that in marketing all the time. So it's no wonder that overspending is one of the ways that people choose to use debt just to feel good. And this is also, I mean, I have a lot of clients who are in debt, and they're some of my favorite people to work with because we can really get into some deep healing work through debt exploration. Mm-hmm. But the third way to use debt is through strategic leverage. So borrowing money to make investments in your life to grow. And that may look like real estate investment. That also may look like relationship coaching or money coaching, right? There, it's like you can be in $100,000 of debt for every single one of the reasons that I listed below. It's just trying to determine how you want to use debt. Are you using it in the way that's most in alignment? And then just really, I mean, I love debt as long as you're using it in the way that you consciously want to.
Right. And what I love about your perspective on it is there are people in the industry that will talk about, you know, buying cars and homes with cash only. And honestly, like that is a statement of privilege. Not a lot of people can ever get to that point where they can do that. But if you can start to transform your perspective on debt, you can learn to leverage it so that you can build wealth using debt.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're talking about Dave Ramsey here.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to name names, but if we're going to.
Yeah. We're going to name names. Dave Ramsey is canceled. I know that he's done a lot of really amazing work for a lot of people. And there's just philosophically a lot of things that I don't agree with, that being one of them. I do think that it is really challenging for people to pay cash for everything. And I think it keeps a lot of people really, really financially anxious for much longer than what they really need to be. And I just, I don't have that style with money. I believe that it is in everyone's best interest to feel great about money. And I don't feel like that is the message behind Dave Ramsey's work. It is very, I feel like there's a lot of shame. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of like, yeah, even on his radio show, I just feel like it's not necessarily supporting people in their emotional wellness as much as I think it's very important to do that for people when you're working with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember having arguments with people that were diehard Dave Ramsey people way back because I've always leveraged credit cards and didn't like carrying a ton of cash. I had family members that got robbed like years ago. And it's just like, as a practice that I do carry some cash, but I don't carry a lot of cash. And with the Dave Ramsey method, you were carrying like the cash you were using entirely in these envelopes. And I just like didn't agree with it. I didn't like going to the bank. I didn't like any of that. And so when that method was presented to me in my early 20s, I was like, I am not doing that. Like, I don't have credit card debt. I've never had it. I always make my payments on time. So I'm going to keep using my credit card responsibly.
Yeah. And that's definitely an option. And listen, with credit cards, there are still a lot of things that I choose not to use credit cards for because of the history that I have with credit cards. But I think it's just personal choice for people. You have to, I think the beauty of money is like, and the beauty of what the work that I love to do with people is like, money can be an entry point to healing yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that everything that we're talking about now, it's just the top layer. Money is the top layer. And then when you really dive in, it's like, okay, what works best for you? Like, get to know you. And for some people it is credit cards, but for others it's not.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And there's so many things when you go five layers deeper around your behaviors with money.
Oh yeah, there really is. I mean, that is what is so fascinating to me. That discovery of like really starting to understand, how does your brain work with money? How do you think about money? How do you feel about money? And oftentimes there are so many thoughts about money that are just, that really appear to be responsible. Like a lot of people that I work with will believe like, oh, I'm just not good with money, or I don't know how to use money. And it's like all of these thoughts that we think we need to think about ourselves in order to make sure that we don't make stupid decisions. These are all the thoughts that actually perpetuate the stupid decisions. It's like our brain believes that it needs to punish us before we actually do the thing that's bad. But by our brain punishing us, it is the reason that we do the thing that's out of alignment. And so it's very, very interesting to really just dive into all of the different ways that we think about money. And you know this, money and relationships are very closely related, right? A lot of the thoughts that can create money situations that are undesirable can also create undesirable relationship situations.
Oh, yes. I talk about this all the time, how a lot of the times in our attachment styles, like if we're super avoidant with conflict, like it's not unusual to be really avoidant with your finances. And if you're super anxious, like it's not uncommon for you to be anxious in your relationship with your money as well. And so, yeah, as you heal one, you definitely, it's almost impossible to not touch the other.
Yeah, it really, I totally agree. It is, they really do work hand in hand. And that's why working with couples can be so much fun, to really get them in a room because it's like a lot of the repeated patterns that play out in their relationship actually will start to come into financial conversations. And it can be such an illuminator to the health of someone's relationship, as we just talk about money. And so that alone is evidence that it's like, okay, there's some kind of relationship between relationship health and financial health that's going on here.
Mm-hmm. So on that vein, how do you and Craig manage your finances together? And what do you typically recommend for other couples?
Yeah. So what we do works really well for us. And I think every couple is a little bit different, but we each have a personal account that we use specifically for our own life stuff. So if I go get my hair done, or if I go buy myself new clothes, like we still maintain that level of financial autonomy. And we specifically choose how much money from our income we're going to give ourselves every month for that area of our financial life. Outside of that, we have everything else combined. So we have obviously our homes. We own all of our homes together, and we have our joint spending, which is combined. And that's exclusively used for if we are doing things together. I think the most helpful thing that we do with our money is that we have designated buckets for specific parts of our lives that we contribute a predetermined amount of money into every single month. So for example, we have a joint spending account that we use, like I said, for our joint spending. So if we're going to go out to eat or buy shoes, or although we wouldn't buy shoes from that account, more of the things that we do together, you get it, entertainment. Mm-hmm. We have a specific amount of money that we care for together and that we've both contributed to. And I think that's really nice because it's not like when we go out to eat together or if we're going to go see a movie together. Sure, at times one of us will treat each other from that personal account, but the majority of the time we just use our shared account. And it is an account we've both contributed to. And so there's not a lot of back and forth around like, oh, are you going to pay for this? Am I? We just, it comes out of the joint that we've both agreed upon the amount of money that we want to contribute. Now, we do a 50-50 split because we are both earning about the same amount of money. Even though I earn a bit more in my pay, in my business, I do pay myself about the same that he is paid. So that's how we do it. But some couples may choose to do it completely separate or completely together. It is personal preference, but I do find that with the clients that I work with, a combination of separate accounts for your personal expenses and then everything else merged seems to be a pretty good formula.
Mm, I love it. So if people are interested in money coaching and they're, you know, still trying to understand like what is the difference between money coaching and financial planning, what would you say to them?
Sure. So financial planning is a great exercise. You work with a financial planner. They should help you build a future plan for your money by telling you how much to spend, how much to save, how much to invest. And they will give you a plan at the end. What I do is a bit different. So I work specifically with entrepreneurs and I help them transform their mindset with money so they can effectively and efficiently execute all of the to-do items. Because what can often happen when you go to a financial planner is you are given this beautiful plan of what you need to do, but then you're left to your own devices to actually execute it. So money coaching really supports in the mindset that can get in the way of someone actually executing the plan. And so when you go to money coaching, you are not only going to get a plan, but you're also going to get the coaching to help you efficiently and effectively execute the plan, hit your income goals, and build wealth.
Mm, that's amazing. For the record, I love money coaching, and I think if you're interested, you should definitely consider it. So if people are considering money coaching, where can people find and support you?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at holistic.money, or you can go to my website, holistic-money.com. And I also have a one-on-one coaching offer that I do for entrepreneurs who want to grow their business and start building multiple income streams.
Yes. And if you do go talk to Whitney, tell her that you found her through the podcast. We love hearing that you listened and that you got value, and it's just awesome to make that connection.
Yes, please do. I love Sophie.
So before we dive into the last few questions, I just want to take a moment to acknowledge you, Whitney, and just say thank you for your vulnerability, your honesty, our friendship, and all of the ways that you have believed in me and spoken truth and helped me rewire my beliefs, not just in money, but I think around what's possible in my life and who I am as a person. And I feel like so many other people are being impacted on a deeper level because of the work we did together. So thank you.
It is so beautiful to receive that. And I am really honored that you and I became friends and that you allowed me to play this role in your life. And I am very certain that you and I are going to do incredible things in the world together. And I'm so thankful to know you, because to have a friend that's in such deep alignment with like who I am and where I'm going and like really be walking this path with me, it feels really, really good. So thank you.
Absolutely. So, what are three truths about life or love that you live by?
Oh, gosh. Number one is life is a journey. Whenever I find myself getting way too caught up in what things look like today, I really, really try to zoom out and just remember that I am constantly walking a path that doesn't have a beginning or an end, and that it just is a winding path. So gotta enjoy the journey. That's a really big one for me. Number two, I want to think about one for love. I think the biggest truth that I live by for love is the partnership and relationship that I have is just two people supporting each other on our unique paths. And anytime I find myself out of alignment or wanting or needing it to be different than that, I really just try to zoom out and remember that our sole purpose in our partnership is to support each other in this life in whatever way each person desires and needs. And lastly, your worth is not your net worth. I think this one is so important to remember that we as humans are 100% worthy and whole, and we are worthy of money, but that does not mean our worth is defined by money. If we were really able to believe this on a cellular level, I think that we would experience so much more freedom and fun in our lives and with money.
What is the best relationship advice you have ever received or could give?
Oh my gosh. I feel like it's definitely come from you. And it is that conflict isn't a problem. It's really good, actually. And I think that for me, that's been life-changing because it's really helped me change my perspective on fights and just disagreements in general.
Yeah. That's funny because I literally just recorded a solo podcast episode on this exact topic. So be sure to check that one out. And lastly, what does love or love intently mean to you?
It just means to keep my heart open and to keep myself out of judgment and to really just have compassion and awareness for the humanity in all of us. And I think it goes down to just believing that every person at their core is good, and that anything that stands in between someone being the person that they truly want to be is just trauma that we can all heal.
Thank you so much for listening, friends. Whitney is such a special person. I know I say that about everyone, but I really am grateful for Whitney and the work that we've done together. She really helped me transform the way I think about money and how I relate to that. I have had so many money blocks. I did not come from wealth. And really, my conversations with her and the mindset work I've done with her and on my own has transformed the way that I relate to money. And what's really powerful about that is when you transform your relationship with money, the people closest to you will also start to shift. Doesn't always happen, but I will say that my partner, my boyfriend, as I have shifted my relationship with money and had these honest conversations with him, he has also shifted. And we both come from family systems where we didn't have a lot of money growing up. And so we carry that into adulthood. But just through intention and work, we've been able to change that. And I believe that's possible for everyone. And money is so important because it's something that's going to be a part of our lives no matter what. Like, if we're alive in this society, we will have to deal with money. We will have to have money. And it's something that we can either choose to have a war with for our whole lives and neglect, or we can start to see it as a tool and build wealth and really allow us to create the life that we want and not let it be a strain or something that we're constantly fighting about with our partners or constantly stressed about. So with all of that being said, be sure to check out Whitney at holistic.money on Instagram or check out her website, which we will link in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, friends. I am so grateful for all of you. And if anything in this episode resonated with you, be sure to let us know on Instagram, either DM us or take a screenshot and tag us in your stories. We love, love, love hearing from you. And it really helps me create more content that ultimately brings you more value. If you have specific questions that you want me to ask additional future experts around money or have any topics or questions around money that you would love to dive into, send me a DM with your question. You can find me at SophQuok or love.intently. You can even send me a voice memo if that feels more comfortable. And if you have a moment today, it would mean so much if you could leave us a 5-star review and a written review on Apple Podcasts. These reviews really, really help us get in front of more people and ultimately share more love with more people. I hope you all have a wonderful week. You are so loved. You are so worthy and incredible and powerful. And I hope you listen to that part again if you don't believe that, because just by being alive, you are worthy of love and you are loved. And I am just eternally grateful for you. Until next time, with love and intention.